Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my great pleasure to serve this warm and loving congregation. You are so welcome here this morning, however you are, whoever you are. If you are looking to this coming week with great cheer and hopefulness, or if it's absolutely breaking your heart. And you're welcome here if you just love the coziness of these dark winter days, or if it's just causing you to feel more claustrophobic with isolation. And you're welcome here if you feel such hope with this vaccine coming, or if it just feels like another dark 6 to 9 months before this will be over. Again, however you are, whoever you are, you're welcome with us today. And if you happened onto this live stream or this recording and you're new to us, please go to our website and ask our administrator to get on our mailing list so that you can join all the ways that our community is connecting during this time of COVID in small groups and in other ways. In the dark winter, from as long back, from before we even have memories or records, people lit fires and gathered round as one people, remembering who they were in stories and songs. And each week we light our chalice and we gather around to remember who we are in stories and in songs. In the dark of winter, it is so good to feel the warmth of fire and community and share what makes us one people. And remember that we are connected in our commitment to bring more love and more joy and more hope to the world. And we light our flame of our community to remember this commitment and our hope. Let us say our affirmation. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. We will now hear from Kira.
The first Noel, the angels did say, was to certain poor shepherds in fields as they lay, in fields where they lay keeping the sheep on a cold winter's night that was so deep. Noel, born is the King of Israel. They looked up and saw a star shining in the east beyond them far, and to the earth it gave a great light, and so it continued both day and night. Noel, born is the King of Israel.
After that moment of stillness, that sun, which had shortened the light each day in the north, begins to lengthen the days. In that moment of stillness, in the next moment there's a shift. The earth's relationship to the sun has changed. Our relationship with the sun has changed. After the stillness, people light fires. They share wisdom. They tell stories. They sing songs. So let us do the same.
The Solstice Teaches by David Breeden. The solstices teach us that darkness comes and darkness goes. The solstices teach us that light comes and light goes. The solstices teach us calmly, silently, to be calm, silent, learning. The solstices teach us, as we circle the sun, that everything flies. The solstices teach us to remember the dark, to remember the light, to remember time. The solstices and love as we circle the sun.
Good morning, friends. It is so good to be together this morning. I want to tell you a story today about the seasons. And there are many stories and myths throughout the world's cultures about the reason that the seasons change. And as we move through this holiday season and celebrate the solstice, I want to share with you the story of Persephone, who was the Greek goddess of vegetation and grain, who we know also as the queen of the underworld, for she was married to Hades, who was the king of the underworld. The story of their relationship is full of drama and strife and kidnapping. And that is the story I'm going to share with you today. Persephone was a young goddess, and her mother Demeter, who was the goddess of the harvest, kept her safe and protected. And the one time that Demeter let her explore the human world, Hades saw her. And the myth says that Hades fell in love. And what I think about love is that when you're in love with someone, you don't hurt them. You don't cause them pain, and you don't keep them from the other people in their lives who love them. So Hades falls in love with Persephone, and he goes to Zeus, who's king of the gods, and he says, "Zeus, I would like to marry Persephone." And Zeus says, "Her mother's never going to allow that, but I will turn a blind eye and I will let you kidnap Persephone and take her to the underworld." Bad Zeus. But Zeus allows Hades to kidnap Persephone. Hades turns Persephone into queen of the underworld. And Demeter doesn't see any of this happen. She searches far and wide for her child. Her anger turns the fields in the human world to dust. Nothing can grow. People are dying of starvation. The lands are barren. Finally, she finds out that Persephone has been taken into the underworld. And she goes to Zeus and she begs and begs and begs, "Return my daughter to me, return my daughter to me, or I will continue to have the lands of the earth be barren. People will continue to suffer." And Zeus finally comes up with a compromise that Persephone may leave the underworld and return with her mother. Hades, hearing this compromise and being grows furious and thinks of a trick. He knows that if Persephone eats pomegranate seeds, which are the fruit of the underworld, she will have to return, because the temptation of eating those pomegranate seeds once more will be too great to resist. So as she's leaving the underworld, Hades gives Persephone 7 pomegranate seeds, which she eats. and returns and is reunited with her mother. And Demeter is so happy and she celebrates, and the rains fall and the land once again is able to bear fruit and be plentiful. But as the months go by, Demeter notices that Persephone is getting a little impatient. Demeter goes to her daughter and she asks, "Persephone, please, please tell me that you did not eat any food while you were in the underworld." And Persephone says, "Unfortunately, mother, I did. And I must return to Hades." So, 6 months out of the year, Persephone lives with her mother. It is spring and summer, and it is the time when food is plentiful and light and sun shine upon the earth. And in fall, Persephone returns to the underworld. And Demeter grieves once more the loss of her daughter, and the days grow dark and cold, and the earth turns barren. Not so much in Oregon, where things continue to grow over the winter. But friends, I am here to remind you that once more Persephone will return. Spring will come again. A vaccine is on its way, and we will be together again soon. I so look forward to turning towards the light. Turning towards gathering again together, turning towards sharing our joys and celebrating with you once more.
So this is another story about the sun. And this story is from the Southern Hemisphere. It is a story told by the Wakayo people of the Ornacoa River Valley in Venezuela. And these people built their houses on pyres that they stuck into the waters and swamps of the river valleys. And when the Spanish conquerors came, they saw the waters that went between all the buildings and houses and were reminded of Venice, and which is how the name Venezuela came to be. And so this is their story of how the sun came to be. So when the world began, it was completely dark. And for the people to see anything, they had to have torches that had fire on them. And so they went about doing their tasks during the day, and it was difficult. They couldn't really see each other's faces, and it was hard to make food or to hunt or do anything, but this is how life was. And then the chief at the time had heard rumors of something called light. And he decided one day that it was worth searching for this light. And so he asked his oldest daughter to go looking for the keeper of this light. And he gave her a blessing, and he blew softly into her face for good luck. And she went into the forest, and there were many, many pathways to choose from. And she paused a moment and chose the path that seemed best for her. And she went deep into the forest, and she found Deer's home. And Deer was very friendly and warm, and they got along very well, and they played and made music together and laughed and played games and made food and really had the best of times. And then the young woman remembered that she was supposed to be looking for light for her father and thought maybe she'd best go home. And so she did. And she told her father that she had not found light, but she had found Deer, and she would very much like to marry him. And so her father went to his younger daughter and asked her if she would go searching for light. She said she would, and he gave her a blessing and blew gently into her face and said, "I'll also play my flute for you." And so the daughter also came to the place where there were the many, many pathways, and looked and looked, and she heard her father's beautiful flute music, and she saw one that seemed so old, and decided this must be the right path. And so she took the path deep into the forest, and indeed it was. She found a young man who had a box that was made of woven palm leaves. It was a brown, tightly woven, beautiful, beautiful box. And when he opened it, out came light, and she could see him. He had beautiful, warm, brown skin and the most delightful smile and crinkles around his eyes when he smiled. He was beautiful to look at. And they, too, had so much fun together. They laughed and they played and they made music. And each day they would open the light box and look at each other. She loved light as much as she loved the light box keeper. And then one day she too remembered, I'm supposed to bring light to my father. And so she asked the light box keeper, may I bring this light box to my father? And he said, of course, it is a gift to you and your people. And so she took the box and she brought it to her father. And he was delighted with light. He opened the box and looked at his family, and they looked at the insides of their house, and they looked at the water, and they looked at the trees, and it was so amazing to see everything. And that he kept the box open, and he hung it from one of the poles that went deep into the water inside his home. And all of the neighbors wanted to come see light, and so they came, and they kept coming, and they packed full the house, and then they were on the porch, and there were so many people, and people from all over were telling other people, and they kept coming, and they kept packing the house full, and the chief was getting, it was really, really full. People were just sandwiched in there. It was getting a little claustrophobic, and the chief was getting a little irritable. And he said, well, maybe it's time for everybody to go home now. But nobody really wanted to go home now because the light was pretty fabulous, it turned out. And so nobody was really leaving. So the chief got a little exasperated, and then he thought, whoa, I'll do something. And so he took the light box, and he threw it as hard as he could into the sky. And the light and the box separated, and the light went to the one side of the sky and became the sun, and the box went to the other side of the sky and became the moon. And they were there for everyone. Everyone could go to their own houses and have the light and this new thing called the moon. There was one tiny problem, though. He had thrown them so hard that the light would go across the sky so fast that it really didn't give anybody time to do any of their chores. And the moon would go across so fast, which seemed like a really good time for sleeping, it turned out, that nobody really had time to get any good sleep. And so the chief thought about this, and he found a turtle, and he decided to give it as a gift to the sun. And he threw the turtle up to the sun. And the sun found the turtle and liked the turtle very much. And then he didn't want to walk faster than the turtle across the sky. And so the turtle would set the pace every day for the sun and the moon to go across the sky. And so the days would be long enough to get a few things done in the light, and the nights would be long enough to get some sleeping time and have a lot of good dreams. And that is how we have night and day. So recognizing the winter solstice, an event that is going to happen for us just roughly 15 hours from now, seems to be a very deep human need. From Australia to Norway, from Alaska to Peru, from Japan to Mexico, and places in between, people have across millennia recognized this brief moment in the sweep of the solar year. They have placed stones in England and Australia and placed buildings in Peru that focus human attention on the first rays of dawn on the winter solstice. People have lit fires and candles. They have stayed up till midnight and woken with the sunrise. They have danced and sang. They have floated boats with flowers and candles and taken hot baths. They have recited poetry and prayed. They have fasted and feasted. We always tend to imagine that ancient people, who we like to think, depended on the cycles of the earth much more than we do, watched closely for the shift, afraid perhaps it might not happen. Once it did, they would feast and party because it meant that eventually spring would come and they would not starve. At least that's what they told me in elementary school. And I don't know if that is true or not. Homo sapiens were cognitively as bright as we are and had certainly worked out that the seasons cycled predictably. Certainly the shift to longer days was much more important to them since they had no easy way to light and warm their homes or keep food for long periods of time. Still, we know, as they certainly did, that there is not much lived sense of longer days until almost the end of January in northern parts of the planet. So why the winter solstice? Why has this been nearly universally celebrated in northern latitudes? Why do we still celebrate this time of year when so many of the other pagan and indigenous rituals and celebrations connected with the sun and earth have faded from most modern faiths and secular life? I wonder if perhaps it is related to our primal relationship to the sun. We are her, his, their energy. We literally have no life without the sun. The sun, the moon, the earth create our internal clocks and rhythms. We beat with them. For those in northern latitudes, that shift when the earth sweeps closer to the sun after pulling away for months is like the sun's covenant with us. The light and warmth will return, that moment says. The plants will grow. You will eat. Life is bountiful. I promise. I think at the deepest physical, spiritual level, this is what hope feels like. That even though it will still be dark and cold for months, light and warmth are coming steadily closer. This is hope. When life is difficult, there is a glimmer of something possible. When challenges fill the landscape, that glimmer holds steady. It is the hope that things can change, that things might change, that there are other possibilities. The solstice is a promise to us as human beings. Things will change. That's the way the planet is constructed. This is one reason I believe the solstice matters so much to people, wherever we live, whatever culture we have created. Human existence is both challenging and marvelous, and the solstice reminds us of the promise of both. While celebrating the winter solstice is widespread through human cultures, the stories we tell about it and how the sun came to be are as varied as the cultures that made them. Many of us learned as children the Greek myth Hannah told this morning about Persephone and Hades. I have always loved this story. It's been one of my favorites for years and have told it often. And these days I'm a little less clear why. It is the story of a young girl kidnapped by a powerful god, scared in the underworld, and her grieving mother. I suppose the hope comes from battling powers and trickery, and I suppose it was always so good for me, that the woman, the mother, won something, and that that spring came. She didn't win everything, but I guess that was always true in the world I was raised in. Women didn't always win everything, but in this story, something was won, and it brought spring and summer to us. Another story I have often been told at the solstice, and the one that Hannah told us last year, is the story of Raven, and it is the story of the indigenous people of the Pacific North, coastal Pacific Northwest, this area. In this story, the people live in a dark world. However, the Sky Chief keeps a small round ball of light in a box in his home, and Raven decides to get it for the people. He turns himself into a pine needle. The Sky Chief's daughter swallows the pine needle and gives birth to a child who is Raven. Raven uses all the coaxing magic that the grandchildren have over grandparents and convinces his grandfather to let him play with the round ball of light. He then snatches it in his beak and flies away, giving it to all the people so they have a son. In this story, similar to so many others across the world, a trickster takes the sun from the sky people or the gods. There is fun in the way Raven convinces the one with the power to open the box. The Sky Chief will deny his grandson nothing. We laugh. There's no meanness in this story. Hope comes in working playfully around what is in our way. Today, I told a third story, The Lightkeeper's Box, from the Waro people of the Orinoco Valley, River Valley of Venezuela. It doesn't flow with the story arc we are taught in school, with the rising tension, and doesn't really come with the required conflict. Instead, everyone loves everyone, and the only time there is any slight stress is because the house is getting overfull, and the solution isn't any anger or anything. Instead, the chief throws the light into the sky so everyone can share it. Hope seems to be in the overflowing natural grace of the world. Everywhere you go, you ask, and you just get what you need. Across the world, people have told stories of a sun god born at the time of the solstice. In these stories, the child is the hope of the returning life of the solstice personified. Often the sun god dies and is reborn, making yet another connection between the dying off of the life of winter and its return in the spring. In ancient Persia, Anahita, the mother goddess, gave birth to the sun god Mithra. In Egypt, Isis gave birth to the sun god Horus. In medieval Mexico, the Aztec goddess gave birth to the sun god Totec. In West Africa, Nanabuka gave birth to the sun god Liza. Jesus Christ followed in the tradition of these sun gods. He was born on December 25th, often the sun god's birthday in the Middle East. Early on, in some traditions, he was referred to as the sun. He died and was reborn. He is still called the light of the world. Most importantly, though, to this day, Christmas, his birthday, is said to signal hope for a world of love and peace. This is what the story tells of hope, that when a baby is born and kindness is offered and people remember the awe of new life, possibilities exist for new ways of being. We live in liminal times. The pandemic is shifting our culture, and we don't know what it will be or how the larger challenges of climate change, racism, and inequality will continue to transform our world. We need hope. We need a glimmer that as we traverse challenges, that there will be bountiful crops, long days, love at the other end. And since we are human, we need more than a shift in the Earth's relationship to the sun to get us there. We need stories. So what stories do we choose? The kind where we must sacrifice and wield our power with force and pain, like Demeter, to get what we want? Or will we trick the powerful to release the bounty? Or stories where all good is given freely? Or stories where new life constantly offers possibilities for ways of being that we are just imagining? We live in liminal times, and it is the solstice, the time of primal, deep human hope. Let us choose the stories that will sustain us as we find our way forward into the world that we've all been dreaming of. A world where people love one another and care for one another. A world where we really hold up the worth of each and every person, and we care for the interconnectedness of all life. May it be so.
Our benediction is from the poet, the Reverend Lynn Unger. Call it spare time, dark afternoons, and the bones of trees rattling against the sky. We could use more hope, more reason for hope. The sea is rising, and bombs are planted in the marketplace. It might be better to just go to bed. It might be better to turn out the lights and wait for the end to come. The only other choice is to dance. That and to sing sturdy songs that have held up across the winters, drink wine, the deep red of blood that has not been shed. Feast, tell tales of heroes who strode or stumbled through their own bleak times. When in doubt, revel in the darkness. Each act of celebration is a spark. Gathered together, they bring back the sun. So go, my friends, and celebrate this solstice. Tell the stories and sing the songs and light the fires. And be good to one another and love those you love, even when times are dark. We extinguish the light of this chalice, but not the warmth and inspiration of our faith, nor our commitment to its principles. These we will carry with us until we meet again.